My name's Cadence Weapon, and you're listening to 1690 AM Radio in Montreal.
I met her at an art show. She looked like Hallie. Walked to a loft show. I pissed in the alley, and she didn't seem to mind.
We're listening to CJLO News. Montreal's municipal election results are in. Soraya Martinez Ferrada of Ensemble Montréal has been elected as the city's next mayor. At the time of this report, polls show Martinez Ferrada with 43% of the vote, defeating Projet Montréal's Luc Rabouin with an 8-point lead. Rabouin is now stepping down as party leader for Projet. Ensemble won with a mandate to speed up private housing developments, audit and freeze bike lane construction, increase police spending. And one crucial campaign promise is the integration of artificial intelligence, or AI, into municipal governance. Ensemble has promised over the next 4 years to use AI to speed up the permit process for private development. Here in the Loyola District, Ensemble candidate Alexandre Teodorescu won his city councilor position. Teodorescu is the co-president of the company Entertain AI. Here's Teodorescu.
It's all about transforming information and words, basically. And a lot of what's happening within the city apparatus or the city and the population is about transferring information on the word format, basically, data format, a human intelligible format to another place, another office. And so I give you the example of, for me, The one lever that we have that will have the most impact downstream is the permits.
Many are critical of the incorporation of AI into municipal governance. Local environmental activist group Climate Justice Montreal raises concerns about AI's environmental impact. Here's organizer Nicolas Chavagnier.
From a climate perspective, AI is terrible because its expansion is untethered at this point. Data centers are going up all over, including in Quebec. And are stealing water from communities because they need a lot of water to cool the systems, but also causing a lot of atmospheric pollution and noise pollution from their running.
Chavagnier also argues that AI is trained on data sets that will lead to inefficiencies and oversights.
The dependence on AI is magical thinking. I mean, that's the best way to put it. The answers that AI gives are built off the data that you feed it. So if racism, classism, and, you know, misogyny are built into the data sets that are fed to AI, they will simply replicate those systems. And that's definitely what we're going to see if they implement AI as a way to deal with traffic, with deal with construction. The same places that are underserved or underconsidered for access during construction will, drown under orange cones.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Minnis.
Thank you. solidarity with all the missing murdered people. Solidarity, solidarity.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well. What a show we have for you guys today. Unfortunately, we will have to recap that World Series, and man, that was heartbreaking. We'll get into that. We'll get into week number 9 of the National Football League season. We're beyond the halfway point now, and the playoff picture is starting to... How do I say this? You don't want to rule teams out. You can rule out a few teams, but they started this week on the coverage showing the playoff picture, where teams stand, where people stand in the wild card race, the head-to-head matchups. We're starting to see that now as we enter November with this the second half of the year going by. So we'll get into that. College football, we have the college football playoff rankings that come out tomorrow, the first one there. And we had big losses in college football, whether it was Tennessee, Miami losing to SMU. There was a whole bunch of upsets in college football over the weekend. We will get into that as always. And then the National Hockey League. We got some big stories, including the Montreal Canadiens, who are tied along with Detroit for the best record in the Atlantic, but they've played one less game. They are 9-3 to start the year. They've won 3 in a row. They are red hot. We'll get into the Canadiens as well. And we'll also get into the National Basketball Association, as it's now been 2 weeks of the regular season. And we have some surprise teams at the top, especially in the East. The Bulls are 5-1. No one saw that coming. The Philadelphia 76ers are 5-1 after their disastrous season last year. And not to mention, we have a huge surprise in the NBA. Who would have expected the San Antonio Spurs being the 2 seed already in the Western Conference? We knew Victor Wembanyama was a superstar in the making. He had all the tools to be one of the great players the league has ever seen. And boy, has he lived up to the hype. And the NBA champs still have not lost. They are 7-0, and there's no signs of them slowing down. So we'll get into all of it over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. Remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The Tommy John Show is on it. And if you missed the show live today on CGLO, you can check us out on Spotify. We post up the audio files after the show. So if you missed anything today, head to the Spotify account, and the whole show will be there. For the Tommy John Show. So we will start off, unfortunately, with the World Series. I didn't want to do it. Hopefully today was going to be about the Jays winning their first ring in 32 years. That was a heartbreaker. And even not as a diehard Jays fan, I root for the Jays when the Red Sox are out of it just because we're in Canada. They're my second team, if you are allowed a second team. To lose a game in that fashion is quite heartbreaking. And the way the Jays lost several times in this series is quite heartbreaking. Whether it was Game 3, that 18-inning marathon, whether it was on Friday night when Addison Barger's ball gets stuck in the wall, and then they have runners on second and third, no outs. That was horrifying. And then Game 7, though, felt like all the other games the Jays have won. They get off to a fast start, get a big home run by a big player, whether it was Barger or Varsho in Game 1, whether it was Vladdy in Game 4. We were expecting that would be the ball game there at 3-0. And then they get the insurance run later on to make it 4-2. But what it comes down to is they were even... Let's go to the 9th inning. I know you can say, oh, you Savage gave up the home run to Muncy, which was a big moment to cut the lead to 1. But if you look at it, Game 7, 9th inning, 3 outs to win a World Series, you get the first out. And watching the game, I was not focused on Rojas at all. I was thinking, how the hell are they going to handle Ohtani? Because I assume the 9-hitter is not going to get on base, or he's not going to be hitting a home run, and Ohtani would be up there either as the tying run or the winning run, or the leading run, I should say, the go-ahead run. So I was just focused on Ohtani. Wasn't thinking the 9-hitter was going to do anything. And Hoffman makes a bad pitch, which he has done several times this year. I know he was great against Seattle to close out the ALCS, and he has been great in spots this year. But if you watch the Blue Jays week in and week out, or daily, he has sometimes been the subject of late home runs. He throws a meatball over the middle and it's just absolutely spat on and it's gone. And it's happened several times this year. And I still had a bad feeling. I thought it was going to be Ohtani. All the stars were in line for Ohtani. You know, 2 outs, an out away, best player on the planet. But it was Rojas, and he hits the home run, and then Ohtani flies out the next pitch, and the Jays get out of the inning tied. So that is a bummer in one sense. All right, we could have won the World Series there. We didn't even have the bat. But the Blue Jays did get to bat, and they had so many opportunities from then on to win the World Series. It's crazy. They had, my goodness, they had the bases loaded in the 9th inning. With 2 outs, then they throw out Kiner Falefa at the plate, which we can argue if you should have had a bigger lead on, but to be quite frank, it's Kiner Falefa. He can't do anything right at the moment. He really has been appalling in these postseasons. I get why they pulled Bichette out there, because they needed speed. They needed someone faster. Bichette couldn't really run. He could hit, but he couldn't really run around the bases. That was another factor. Early in the game, Clement hits a single, and Bo's on second. He can't run the home. He can't really run. So that would have been another run for the Blue Jays there. But that was a moment, and then was it Varsho grounded out, and they chose to throw, obviously, Kiner Falefa out at home, and it was close. But I think Muncy got him. Nah, that's just me. But Will Smith got him. His foot came off the plate, back on the plate. He was out. And then Ernie Clement hit an absolute rocket to left field. and Kike Hernandez and was it Páez, the other guy, they run into each other and he still makes the catch, which is unbelievable. And the Dodgers got found a way to get to the ninth, to the 10th inning. But then in the 11th inning, first of all, putting Dominguez in the 10th with a bit strained, he was trying to let that game slip away. But the Blue Jays get out of it. The bases were loaded at one point. They get out of it. They don't really do anything in the bottom half of the 10th. In the 11th, they go to Shane Bieber. And listen, I knew they would go to Shane Bieber just because he's the only starter left and he could maybe give him a few innings if this game goes longer. He's used to pitching several innings, obviously. But you got to give Will Smith credit. He saw a pitch he liked and he hit a home run. And still, the Jays have some life because in that bottom half of the inning, they had Guerrero hitting the double to getting on base. And then they had everything. They squeezed bunt to get him to third, which I was a bit surprised by. I know they want to get that runner to third base because any contact to the outfield should score Guerrero and tie the game. I understand it. But giving up an out in the World Series is kind of a tough situation. And Jimenez had that big hit early on. Let's not forget that. He drove in the 4-2 run as well. So people were arguing about that. Listen, I'm not going to lose my mind over it. But the worst one is obviously you get Kirk up to hit, and he hits into a double play, and that's the Blue Jay season done in the most heartbreaking fashion you can imagine, being not just three outs away, they were two outs away, and they were also an inch away with Kiner Falefa from winning the World Series. And now they got to start all over again, which is crazy to say. That's professional sports, and especially baseball. It's a long, long season. It's November. They did spring training in February and March. They played 162 games in the regular season. They took down the Yankees. They took down the Mariners. And then took the Los Angeles Dodgers 7 games and were up 3-2 with 2 games at home. So I'm going to be interested to see. This is a young team, in my opinion. I know people said, oh, their average age is 30, but they're going to lose Scherzer. He's not going to come back. I don't think Bieber's going to come back. There's a lot of older players who they won't bring back. But the core is young. Guerrero's young. Yesavage is young. Bichette said he wants to stay there. If Bichette stays in Toronto, he's young. I assume they'll get Ernie Clement done. He's a young player. Kirk's not ancient. They have some good pieces that are Barger's young. Even the guys who stepped up in the regular season, Lor Profito, guys like that, they're all young. So they're going to have a good team again, and the American League stinks, let's be honest. I'm not buying the Yankees. Sure, Gerrit Cole's coming back from injury, and they're going to have Cole and Fried. To me, that won't make much of a difference. The Yankees, come playoff time, aren't really built to win a World Series. The Red Sox still have a lot of holes to fill. The Orioles, maybe. They were so bad this year, but they have talent. They got a new manager. Maybe they show up, and the Rays aren't really going anywhere anyway. So the American League East, there's nothing major there. Maybe the Guardians and the Tigers, but the Tigers are going to lose Scooble. They're going to trade him. I would be shocked if they didn't. He's not signing long-term. The Royals stink. The White Sox stink. The Twins stink. The Athletics are awful. It's not a great... The Angels are awful. The American League stinks. It's going to be between the Blue Jays, the Yankees, the Mariners, maybe Cleveland. Those would be your four teams right now. And I could easily see them get back to a World Series. I really, really could. Now, the Dodgers, now that's their third World Series in 5 years. They won in 2020 in the bubble, which some people like to take away. Listen, it happened. I know it was the shortened season and COVID and all that stuff. Fair enough. It still happened. They won that one. Then they had a few heartbreaking losses in the postseason, whether it was to the Padres. I think they lost, I forget the other series they lost to. Might have been the Phillies. I'm forgetting right now. But then they got to the World Series last year, and they really destroyed the Yankees. It wasn't close at all in 5 games. Once they won that dramatic game 1, the series was pretty much over. And they were down and out in this World Series. I thought they were. After that 18-inning marathon, the Jays took care of business in Dodger Stadium with Kevin Gausman on the mound for Game 6. I know Yamamoto was still getting ready to pitch, but I thought the Blue Jays were in a good spot. But you got to give Yamamoto all the credit in the world. He single-handedly won the Dodgers the World Series based on his performances in Game 2, 6, and 7. To think that he pitched Game 6 And then the next night came in relief the 9th inning, the 10th inning, the 11th inning, not allowing a run and leading the Dodgers to another World Series is quite remarkable. But that's who the Dodgers are. They spend a boatload of money on their roster. They have the Yamamotos. They have the Snells. They have the Otanis. They have the Freddie Freemans. I know Mookie Betts was awful in this series, but he had the big hit in Game 6 to knock in a few runs on Gosman. They have the Mookie Bettses of the world. They have the Teoscar Hernandezes, the Max Muncies. They're loaded. Sasaki in the bullpen. The Dodgers are loaded, and they're going to be the favorites to win yet again next year. And if you look at it right now, it's going to be hard to picture anyone taking down the Phillies in the National League. The Dodgers in the National League. Yes, you could say the Phillies. They played very well against them, especially in LA. They smoked them in Game 3 of the NLDS, and they had them in extra innings in Game Number 4 to force a Game 5 in Philadelphia. So yes, the Phillies are going to be there. Yes, the Brewers are great in the regular season. Can they show any fight in the postseason? We shall see. What are the Cubs going to do with Tucker? There, the Cubs are going to be a factor. And the big wild card for me in the National League is the Mets. Soto, Lindor, will they get Alonso back? They have even a richer owner than the Dodgers. And they could spend more money than the Dodgers if they wanted to. They gave Soto basically $800 million. And you know Cohen's upset of how they melted down the stretch this year. That was awful by the New York Mets, especially by that pitching staff. They were horrendous. They were one of the worst pitching staffs in all of baseball. So I doubt that Steve Cohen wants to do that again. So the Mets might be a real factor if Cohen opens up the checkbook and tries to enhance that roster, because they have more resources than God, the New York Mets do. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it will be harder for the Dodgers to get back to a World Series than the Blue Jays. Maybe that's just me, and that might be a crazy take, but I really think the American League stinks. And yes, we have free agency, and there's going to be some trades that go down. There's a lot of moving parts, but if the Blue Jays keep that core, if they lock up Bichette, bring Clement back, they're going to have Barger, they obviously signed Guerrero, and this is either going to go one or two ways for the Blue Jays. This is either going to make this core hungrier than ever to win a world title, or it was just we got so close and it's too much for them and they never make it back again. It's really could go one in two ways. But I think it's going to go the latter. I really believe the Blue Jays are going to get back to a World Series in the next few years. I do. That's Guerrero is a proven superstar, top 10 player in all of baseball. The Savage kid's going to be a great pitcher for years to come. I imagine they're going to sign Bichette, Clement. Kirk's up under contract. The Barger's coming back, and what a story he was. And not to mention, the Blue Jays say they like their farm system as well. So there you go. Will they be in on Scooble at this offseason for a trade? Who knows? But you know Rodgers likes to spend, and I really think the Jays are going to have a good chance to get back to a World Series in the next 3 years. I really believe that. The Dodgers are the Dodgers. What can you say? They are getting older, though. Snell's not young. Freddie Freeman's in his mid-30s. Mookie Betts is in his mid-30s. Otani's, he's still going to be great. I'm not saying that, but the Dodgers surely can't make it every year. So there's my quick little World Series recap. That is a tough, tough way for the Toronto Blue Jays to lose a World Series. Game 6 at home, a chance to win. Game 7 and the chances they had in Game 7, you can't believe it. Tough, tough way for the season end for the Blue Jays. But you got to be proud of them. What a postseason it was. Even going into the playoffs, analysts, I like the Mariners. The Yankees are going to show up. Oh, I really the Tigers. No one was really picking the Blue Jays to go to the World Series, and they went to the World Series. And even once they got to the World Series, Dodgers in 4, maybe 5. They went toe-to-toe with the highest payroll in baseball and were 2 outs away and an inch away in the bottom of the 9th from winning a World Series. That's all you need to know about this Toronto Blue Jays team. They're very resilient. That batting coach is outstanding. Once he came in and put his fingers on the baseball team, man, did they improve, especially at the plate, running up pitch counts. I really think the Blue Jays got something good going now. I really do. Their first thing on the agenda, though, is talk to Bo Bichette and say, hey, let's stop doing this. Let's just get a deal done. And if they get Bichette done and they have that core with Barger, they get Clement done, I really believe the Blue Jays are going to be back. I really do. And now I need to look at the contract situations of Bassett, of Gausman, of those guys. We'll see, because that pitching rotation has been there for a few years now with Gausman, Berrios, Bassett. So they might look into that, improving that for next year. But overall, the core of the team is going to be there. And if that core is there, they're fine. So maybe enhance the pitching staff and try and get over the top. But the American League, like I say for the 100th time, not impressed with at all. And I'm a Red Sox fan. Yes, we have Roman Anthony, Marcel Meyer, Campbell. We got Crochet, maybe the best pitcher in all baseball right now. We got pieces, but we're not as good as the Blue Jays. No chance we're as good as the Blue Jays right now. No shot. So we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll recap week number 9 in the National Football League. Some big storylines there. We all saw that Jaden Daniels injury on Sunday night did not look good. Big statement by Seattle, though. They looked incredible on Sunday night. Sam Darnold started the game. What was he, 17 of 17, 18, whatever it was? It was unbelievable. He looked like an MVP candidate. The Rams were very impressive. I know against New Orleans, but they looked like a real factor. A big-time performance by the Carolina Panthers. Let's give them credit. Going into Lambeau Field, taking down the Packers. There was a lot of impressive wins yesterday in the National Football League. We'll get into it after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Hey, are you looking for an alternative to FM radio playlists? Then tune in to the World Beat News radio program right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Tuesday from noon to 1 p.m. to hear brand new World Beat music from mainly Canadian artists. Call or text at 848-7471. Some say bureaucrats and education is...
Back here in the Tommy John Show. So week number 9 in the National Football League, and there were some surprises for sure. We mentioned Carolina, what a win that was in Lambeau Field. The Jags going overtime with the Raiders was a wild game too. The Geno at the end just hit the guys wide open. He throws it right to gets batted down at the line, just a horrendous throw. The Vikings going into Detroit and JJ McCarthy, listen. He's been getting a lot of heat, especially in that Minnesota media. He played the first two games, got injured, and the way Carson Wentz was playing and McCarthy was the emergency quarterback, the narrative was that, oh, Minnesota's just done with McCarthy. He stinks. O'Connell can't coach him. And he played tremendous in the football game. And I've been skeptical of J.J. McCarthy. You know, Michigan didn't have to do a whole lot. Is he going to be an all-world quarterback in the league? No. But he can be productive. And yesterday he tried to play clean, did have the one interception, but he ran for a touchdown. He showed a lot of heart in that game. So credit the Vikings. That's a big, big win. And that kind of saves their season a little bit. They're last place in that division, but they're 4-4. Yes, they got a tough schedule. They got Baltimore. They have to play the Packers twice. They have to play the Lions again. Outside of that, they have to play Seattle. But Dallas is, I mean, nothing. They're not the 85 Bears. They're not the 90s Cowboys. They can handle that one. The Commanders game got a whole lot easier without Jaden Daniels. So there's some winnable games on this schedule. And Brian Flores' defense is outstanding. Really outstanding. So the Vikings, they got a little juice now going into the second half of the year. Now that J.J. McCarthy went into Detroit, a game where Sam Darnold froze last year in Detroit for the division. That was not the case. McCarthy looked excellent. And the Vikings get a big win on Sunday afternoon. The Patriots, maybe that's another big storyline as well. Wasn't pretty in the second half. They take it 24-23 and now have won six in a row. They are 7-2. That was a big storyline as well. Seattle, that was a statement on Sunday Night Football, 38-14. Sam Darnold, he's going to be in the MVP conversation. Each week on these shows, whether it be First Take or Get Up or all those ESPN shows, they need a storyline. And when they need a quarterback or a player to enter the MVP conversation every week, the two from this week are going to be, and I'd be shocked if it wasn't, Sam Darnold in Seattle. And then hopefully they start talking about Matthew Stafford, because it feels like he's throwing for four touchdowns every game. And I know it was against the Saints, and when they won in London, and he threw five touchdown passes. That was against the Jaguars. Listen, it's still stats at the end of the day. And if the Rams win that NFC West, an NFC West that is very competitive with Seattle, with San Francisco, who are 6-3, with the Rams, if Matt Stafford can lead the Rams to that division title, win 13 games, and be over 40 touchdown passes, then why in the hell not should he be in the MVP conversation? He's playing outstanding football right now, Matt Stafford. And Puka Nacua, yes, he's been in and out of the lineup. He played yesterday, had to leave yesterday with an injury as well. But Matthew Stafford, he's 24-32, 281, four touchdown passes. Puka Nacua, excellent, went before he left. And Davante Adams is catching touchdown passes now. If you get Davante Adams going with Puka Nacua, that is a scary, scary matchup in the NFC. So to me, in the NFC, I've said it 1,000 times. You're going to have the three teams from the NFC West. You're going to get two from the North. And then you're going to have Philadelphia and Tampa Bay. Those are your playoff teams. Now, Carolina might have something to say about it. I cannot believe they're 5-4 and they're still hanging around. But the NFC North and the NFC West, one division's getting three, and I think it's going to be the West. And then the other one's getting two. And there's your seven playoff teams. Philadelphia and Tampa, they're in. And then you go for the rest. Is it going to be the Bears? Is it going to be the Packers or Lions? Who's going to be the second team there? Well, one of those teams is out. Two of them are in. And then you're going to get the 49ers, Rams, and Seahawks. And there's your playoffs teams from the NFC. So you got eight teams. If you want to include, maybe now you have nine teams. You include Minnesota. If you want to include Carolina, I wouldn't. To me, they just play tough week in and week out. Some weeks they get blown out. Some weeks they get a big win. But right now, it'd be 10. But Washington's done. The Giants are done. The Cowboys are done. The Cardinals are done. Saints, Falcons, they're all done. So to me, Carolina, I can't put them in the done pile yet, because they just went into Lambeau Field and beat the Packers, so I will keep them in it. But if you ask me right now, Rams win the division. I'll go Seattle, San Francisco wildcards. Tampa wins the South. The Eagles win the East. And I'll go Lions, Packers from the North. And that will be the playoffs. And then maybe the only alteration would be Bears in for one of those two teams, Vikings in for one of those teams, and then maybe somehow, some way, if Tampa slips up or Carolina goes on a heater, they fall in. But to me, that's highly unlikely. I've said it 100 times. I've said it since, I think, 2 shows ago. I was so impressed with Seattle. So impressed with what the Shanahan was doing with the 49ers. He's losing players left, right, and center. Has no healthy bodies apart from McCaffrey and now Kittle. And they're winning ball games. Mac Jones is playing football at a high level. Kyle Shanahan, what a job he's doing. And Robert Saleh, what he's done for that defense is remarkable. So to me, the Niners are going to make the playoffs. And that schedule's a joke. But there's only so many teams you can pick. And to me, there are 7 teams... maybe 8 teams that are very good in the NFC, and the rest are meh. And I'm including Minnesota and Carolina in meh. Maybe even the Bears are meh, but they're 5-3, and they scored almost 50 points yesterday. I know, against the worst defense in NFL history, possibly, but still. They're still in the hunt. So that's basically where we stand in the NFC. If you go to the AFC, we had the game everyone looks forward to in the National Football League, and we previewed it last week on our program, Kansas City and Buffalo, and I know the score is 28-21. The Bills thoroughly outplayed them. Mahomes had less than 50% completion percentage. He was erratic. They got to him. Not having Simmons there at left tackle was a huge, huge problem for them. Buffalo's pass rush got home, and that Bishop kid in the secondary was making plays all over the place. Buffalo's defense, for some reason, the regular season, plays unbelievable against Kansas City. Now, here's where it's going to get interesting. Home field is a huge deal for the Bills and the Chiefs in this rivalry, if you want to call it. The Bills dominate the regular season. The Chiefs have utterly dominated the postseason, not in play, but in record. They're 4-0 against the Bills in the playoffs. 3 of those games have been at Arrowhead. This year now, the Chiefs are 5-4. They have to play the Broncos twice. They have to play the Chargers again. Who knows how many wins or losses they'll have. But imagine Buffalo now. They think, great, we're 2.5 ahead of Kansas City. The half is because we beat them head-to-head. So we have 2 more wins than them. We have 2 less losses than them because they already had the bye. KC's bye is next week. So if Buffalo goes down to Miami, and they will, they'll beat up on the Dolphins next week. They're going to be 7-2. The Chiefs are going to be 5-4. With the head-to-head, they're 2.5 up on the Kansas City Chiefs. Their big problem is the Patriots aren't losing any football games. Because if somehow, some way, the Chiefs find a way to win that division at 11-6 or 10-7, yet the Patriots go 13-4, and the Bills also go 13-4, but the Patriots have the head-to-head and the divisional record, the Bills are a wildcard team. And that is a huge, huge deal when they play the Chiefs in the postseason. Now, it's halfway through the year, and as much as I love my Patriots, I'd be shocked if they actually won the division. I know that schedule stinks, but they got a tough game against Tampa Bay next week. They have to go to Baltimore later in the year. They still have to play the Bills again. To me, I would slightly favor Buffalo, but you got to think the Patriots have a boatload of confidence that they went into Buffalo and beat the Bills before all this winning streak even started. So that's got to be a good little confidence for the Patriots. But as we sit right now, if the Bills can get home field and rely on that run game, Kansas City hadn't allowed a 100-yard rusher until yesterday because James Cook went for a 114. If they can lean on Cook and then have Josh Allen just be as efficient as he was yesterday, 23 of 26, then I don't see how Kansas City beats the Bills this year. I don't. The AFC is more complex because you have the New Englands of the world. You have the Indianapolis of the world, which we're not sure. The Denvers, their defense is outstanding. Bo Nix, for some reason, is the worst quarterback in football for 3.5 quarters. And in the last part of the fourth quarter, he'll make a play or make a run that gets them in field goal range, and they win 9-7. Or in yesterday's case, what was it, 18-15? That's what the Broncos are right now. So you got to give them credit. They're well coached. That defense is ferocious, and they're right there in the NFC, in the AFC West. They lead the way right now. Still the Chiefs twice, and they have to play the Chargers again. But right now you have a lot of unknowns. The Broncos are an unknown, the Patriots are an unknown, and the Colts are an unknown, and they're leading their divisions right now. And you have Mahomes on the outside looking in. You have the Bills as a wild card team. Lamar Jackson's not in the playoff, and Joe Burrow ain't going to come back this year now because the Bengals' defense can't stop a Colt. And they were praying Joe Flacco would get them those two games, and he did his best. He threw for, I don't know, 470 yards yesterday, 4 touchdown passes. Joe Flacco did his part, but that defense is historically bad in Cincinnati because if they were in the hunt, I think they bring back Burrow and they make a push for a wild card because the AFC is wide open, but they were let down by their defense big time, and as a result, Joe Burrow's not going to be in the postseason. Who's in it right now? You have Drake May, Daniel Jones, Bo Nix, and Aaron Rodgers at the age of 42. Are your division leaders, and then your wildcard teams, you got Buffalo, you got the Chargers, who are banged up on the offensive line, and then you have, oh my God, I'm forgetting the other team right now, Jacksonville, thank you, Jacksonville. Those are your playoff teams right now, New England, Denver, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, leading the divisions, Chargers, Bills, and Jaguars. No Chiefs, no Ravens, no Bengals. Now, Baltimore looked very good on Thursday night, I know, against the Dolphins, and as a result, the GM out in Miami. Fair enough. And they're already starting to unload pieces in Miami. They traded Phillips to the Eagles about 3 hours ago. So it's going to be just a full-on fleeing of all their good assets. They all want to leave. They're all saying, get me the hell out of here. And to the Dolphins' credit, they're going to acquire a boatload of draft picks and start to rebuild this thing. They are completely blowing it up. So having said that, we really have to look at the AFC closer because I don't know who the best team is. I don't. I thought it was Kansas City getting into a groove. They looked unbelievable a few weeks ago. They played well against Washington in the second half. Mahomes was the favorite for the MVP. The defense is humming. And they were favorites on the road in Buffalo yesterday. And they did not play well at all. And if you ask me right here, right now, gun to my head, who's going to take the AFC, I'd probably go Buffalo. But again, I am not sure. If you told me New England got to the Super Bowl, I wouldn't be surprised right now. If you told me Denver got to the Super Bowl, Indy got to the Super Bowl, I would not be surprised right now. And if you told me that in September, I would have fainted. It is wide, wide open in the AFC. The NFC, I know Philly's better. I know the Rams are better. Seattle, Detroit, those are the teams. All right, those are the best teams in the NFC. The AFC, I don't know who the best teams are. I don't. And I'm not trying to sound like a homer here, but usually a good way to determine who the best teams are is look at their head coach and you look at your quarterback. So yes, you would still have to say Kansas City, have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Fair enough. Buffalo, they have McDermott and Allen. Okay. Peyton and Bo Nix. That's John Peyton, I think, is doing more of the heavy lifting there, but fair enough. Very well coached. Mike Vrabel and Drake May is an elite combination. And their defense played extraordinarily well yesterday, outside of letting Drake London go crazy. But their defense played very well yesterday. They got a huge performance from Pop Douglas, which is nice to see. This Milton Williams signing has been excellent. That defensive front's very good. They forced the intentional grounding late in the game on Michael Penix. They got pieces. And again, I keep saying the schedule matters. If New England wins 12, 13, 14 games, they're going to have a home playoff game. They're going to win the division. So their biggest game of the year for New England is on Sunday. They go to Tampa Bay. If New England can somehow go to Tampa Bay with Nance and Romo on the call and Tracy Wolfson there, the whole CBS A-team there, and they're going to wax poetically about Drake May and about Vrabel and Baker Mayfield, of course. If they win that football game and are 8-2, and they went on the road and they beat Buffalo early in the year, and they went on the road and beat Tampa Bay with a healthy Buccaneers team, I assume. I think Bucky Irving's going to play. Igbuka's going to play. I know Mike Evans is out, but still. But those two guys back, that would be an incredible win for New England, and then the hype really will get real. So to me, they're the wild card. Denver, just Bo Nix is a mystery for the first three quarters, but that defense is so special. It's crazy. And then Indianapolis, and they got absolutely punched in the mouth yesterday by the Steelers. Do they have something to say about it? How will Daniel Jones respond? How will Jonathan Taylor respond? How will Shane Steichen and this team respond? And yes, that division stinks, and they've won it already. I know Jacksonville technically still in the hunt at 5-3, but to be honest with you, that division's done. The NFC North's done. The AFC North, I think's done. That was a big win by the Steelers. So the AFC, we just don't know who the best teams are. It's a crazy problem. Like I said, for the 100th, I'm going to say it again. The NFL have a boatload of crap teams, and we can do this every single week. In the AFC especially, there's no middle ground in the AFC. There's none. There's no, oh, well, there is none. The Raiders are appalling. The Jets are appalling. The Dolphins stink. Oh, my God, do they stink. The Browns are horrendous. They can't move the ball past half field. The Titans are awful. The Texans can't win a football game. It's really, really bad. The AFC is really brutal. And then you have the upper echelons teams. New England 7-2. Colts 7-2. Broncos are 7-2. Then the Steelers are 5-3. They're a good team. The 6-3 are the Chargers. And the middle of the ground record would be the Chiefs, and they're still the Super Bowl favorites. So you like to lump them into the upper echelon. Fair enough. But is there a middle of the ground team that says, ah, they're okay? Jacksonville? But I think Jacksonville's good. To me, there's no Minnesota or Carolina or Chicago in the AFC. I don't think there's one. And the only one that maybe fits it is Jacksonville, but Jacksonville has signature wins. They beat Kansas City in a shootout early in the year. That's a fact. They forced C.J. Stroud into 100 turnovers early in the year, and they won the football game. That's a fact. So to me, I think the Jags are a good team. So they are the closest of the Chicago, Carolina model, Minnesota model. But I don't think there is one in the AFC. The AFC is going to be mayhem down the stretch. The NFC is all done, dusted. Okay, we know who the playoff teams are. The AFC, not a clue. Is it New England going to win the division? Is Denver going to win that impossible AFC West? Who are the wildcard teams going to be? Are the Chiefs going to miss the playoffs? And then here we are. So that's your quick little NFL breakdown. So the main things you can take away from that rant, I'm sorry if I went all over the place, there's just so much to talk about. Sam Darnold, Matt Stafford have entered the MVP conversation, no doubt. Who is the best team in the AFC? And is the NFC West already decided? The NFC already decided. Now, you can decide on who gets the byes. You can decide on who wins each division. But those seven teams are better than all the other ones, and they should make the postseason. And tonight, and I cannot believe that's earlier in the year, maybe that looked a tad better. But poor Buck and Aikman, I know it's the Cowboys and they'll do a big rating. But Arizona and Dallas, that is an awful football game. And in Thursday night, they don't get any good games either. The Raiders and the Broncos, Ravens and Dolphins, Jets, Patriots, these games stink on Thursday night. Quickly look ahead to Week 10. There are some better matchups. We mentioned New England, Tampa. That's a better matchup. Rams, 49ers is going to be a great game. Steelers, Chargers, the Sunday night game's good. The Monday nighters, excellent with Philadelphia and Green Bay. So there's finally some good games that I'll pay attention to. Baltimore, Minnesota's a big game. But to me, I cannot get over how bad some of the games have been. It's been atrocious. I wonder if they'll move Brady and Burkhart off that Lions-Commanders game and give them Rams-49ers, because that command where they're going to talk about Jane Daniels breaking his elbow again. You were going to have Marcus Mariota as the game of the week against the Lions. I don't know. To me, Rams and 49ers is the game of the week, and Fox has it, and they completely went over the top with the game of the week. Game of the week, Jaden Daniels and the Commanders versus the Lions. Mariota's playing, and they have another elite game in that window. I'd be shocked. Or it's just stupid if you don't make that the new game of the week. You got to make Rams 49ers. The way that division's going to come down to the wire, the 49ers went into LA and beat them already on the year, which is a surprise, with Mac Jones at quarterback. All the hype, you have to put 49ers Rams as the game of the week. They won't. They're going to keep it as Lion and Commanders, and we can talk about Jaden Daniels being injured till the cows come home, and we can talk about Dan Campbell firing up his players, you know, smashing watermelons all the time. Fair enough. You can put that as the game of the week, and I won't care because the Lions are going to beat them by 1,000. But the real game of the week is Rams 49ers on Fox, and they got to send Burkhart and Brady there. That'd be crazy if they have to sit in that horrendous stadium in Virginia for the Commanders and the Lions. Watch the Lions be up 3 scores at the half. And then not send them to San Francisco for the Rams 49ers. They got to make a switch. You got to send the A team there. You do. They did it in CBS. As they did in CBS, they moved Rams, then Nance and Romo, I forget off which game, and they gave them Patriots Buccaneers. They moved them off, said, we are not going to give Buck and we're not going to give Nance and Romo Bills Dolphins in Miami. We're not going to do that. They can only do a Josh Allen game so often. The best game of the week that CBS has, Pats going down to Tampa Bay taking on the Buccaneers. They're sending Nance and Romo there. Fox cannot, under any circumstances, still just market this game between the Lions and the Commanders as the America's game of the week. It is not. It is Rams and 49ers. That's the game of the week. It's at the same time, and it's on Fox. That is the game of the week. So call Burkhart, call Brady. Where do you guys say, hey, how about we switch you from, instead of going to Virginia in November, go out to Santa Clara and go see the 49ers take on the Rams and see a game with real importance, because we all know what's going to happen. If it's close at the half, it won't be close going into the fourth quarter. How the Commanders I saw yesterday without Jaden Daniels, they're going to have Marcus Mariota in there. They're going to give the Lions any problems. I would be stunned. And also, if the Commanders win the game, who cares? They're out of it. Who really cares? Rams 49ers is the game. Send Brady and Burkhart there. CBS did it, and programs flex the hell out of games anyway all the time. That has to be done. No two ways around it. And at least the primetime games are good this week for the night. Steelers, Chargers, I like that. Eagles, Packers, like that. Next week, you get Buffalo and Tampa. That's going to be a big game as well. The Sunday night game, Lions, Eagles in 2 weeks' time. So at least the Sunday night games are getting better. I don't want another Washington Seattle, though. That was just a drilling of epic proportions. Let's try and avoid that at all costs. So there you have it, our quick little recap in the National Football League. The trade deadline's tomorrow. Expect some deals. Trey Hendrickson might be on the move. We already heard Jalen Phillips going to Philadelphia for a third-round pick. So we'll see who goes on the move. Will the Saints unload Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed? Will they trade him? There's a lot of options on what these teams are going to do. But to me, if you're in New England, if you're in Indy, if you're in Denver, if you can get better, this AFC is wide open like it hasn't been in years past. It's been the dominant Chiefs. It's been the red hot Bills. It's been Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. If you're in Indy, if you're in New England, if you're in Denver, if you're LA Chargers, you got a chance now. Go and take a big swing and try and get over the line, because you can say, oh, we're building for the future. There might not be a future. You might have a hard schedule, injuries you don't know. If you're in a spot where you can go and make a run to win the AFC, you got to do it. So there's Trey Hendrickson's out there. We don't know how A.J. Brown is feeling in Philadelphia. I'd call Chris Olave. There's a lot of good players open to being traded. So if you're a fringe playoff team or a team that's got off to a better start than expected, I'd go out there and make a trade. I would. We're going to take our second break, and we come back, we'll talk about the red-hot Montreal Canadiens, who don't seem to lose many hockey games. We'll get into them, and we'll also break down a bit of the NBA. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Prepare for the fright of your life, because this Halloween, Ballroom is taking you sinners to church.
Spooky! Godfather Silver Old Navy and Auntie Mag's Old Navy present the What the Halloween Kiki Ball. It'll be a spooktastic night of tricks, treats, and vogue, Miss Thing. Looking to satiate your ghoulish cravings? Auntie D's Kitchen will be serving up their famous patties, refreshments, and, for one night only, a special Halloween platter. And they're not the only ones who'll be serving it up, honey, with paranormal performance, fearsome fashion, and creepy creations never before seen. It'll be a night to die for. We've got Moonstar 007 and Mag's Old Navy on MC duty, and Father Cherry KFC on the decks. Join us on Friday, October 31st at 6 p.m. in the St. Edward Church basement at 425 Beaubien East for a Halloween you'll never forget. For more information on tickets and event details, follow the Montreal Kiki Ballroom Alliance on socials at MTL_KBA. CGLO is a proud partner / co-presenter of the What the Halloween Kiki Ball.
What the Halloween? Be spooky or get spooked.
Tune in to Eastern Promises every Sunday at 8 p.m. with me, Donald Robert, as I take you through the latest and greatest music from Atlantic Canada, featuring everything from traditional fiddle music to hip-hop, jazz, metal, as well as Acadian and Indigenous sounds. Eastern Promises will take you on a journey from westernmost New Brunswick to the furthest edges of Newfoundland. I'll be bringing you music news, tour dates, and some down-home comfort for all you Montreal expats. Join me as I curate a playlist that showcases the extraordinary talent coming out of Canada's right coast since time immemorial. That's Eastern Promises, every Sunday at 8 p.m. here on CJLO 1690.
Back here in Time with John Show. Last 90 seconds or so with you this week. And next week, we will, like I said, we'll recap the NFL trade deadline. We'll recap week 10. We have to get into college football, too. We had the Miami losing. We had Georgia Tech finally losing. And the college football rankings will come out tomorrow on Thursday, the college football ones. And it's going to be interesting. To me, the SEC, they're all the... I think Alabama's the best team. I'm not sure, but there's just a lot of really good teams. Alabama, A&M, Ole Miss, Georgia, Texas with a big win against Vanderbilt. Oklahoma went into Tennessee and won. The SEC's completely up for grabs. And then the Big Ten, Oregon's very good, but the two best teams are Indiana and Ohio State. So there you have it. We'll recap college football as well. Quickly for the Canadians here in the last few seconds on the show, they just seem to win hockey games. That was a great win. Another overtime win, too. They won on overtime against the Kraken on Tuesday. The big win against Ottawa on Saturday. They got the Flyers tomorrow in town. And a big week. New Jersey's a good team. They play the Mammoth, who have played well on Saturday. Kings, Stars, Bruins. It's a fun stretch for Montreal and a good measuring stick. And we're going to see. Is it going to be Dobesh's net going forward or Montembeau? To me, if the tandem plays well, you got to keep them together. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday right here on CGLO 1690 AM.